This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Well, I wanted today to highlight another feature of our training, another concept, another part of the framework that we create and operate within. Concepts, of course, they're all words and things, but they do help to orientate us, to clarify, so that we got some sense of what we're up to, what this is about and what we're up to. And yesterday I was talking about the white cloud, and if you do read the latest book, and rather than flip through it once quickly and then want to read another book, but actually come back and read, and this is exactly pointing to the polishing process that I refer to, which is absolutely the nature and the spirit of how we do this, because we don't have a lot of concepts to keep running after. We've got a very small, tight little bundle, and we just go round and round and round. And blue sky, white cloud encapsulates the totality of our little bundle. So when you've been round it once, rather than go looking at the library, of which is absolutely endless, full of Buddhism these days. I don't know if it runs into millions, but it's certainly many thousands, increasing daily. And you want to go on and on. This is the nature of how we've created ourselves. We're always like this. I'm not enlightened now because I've read that and I'm not enlightened, therefore I'll go and read the next one, and maybe when I've read that I'll be enlightened. And when you're not, you go to the next one, and it's always. And what you do, and if it's Dharma, not if it's even Buddhism, never mind all the other subjects in the world, the universe, that we can take interest in and follow. The Dharma is not, again, the Dharma is not of the world. It isn't something that you just read once and you do understand it on one level, and you say, oh well, I understand that. I don't have to think about that one anymore. I've understood it, therefore I will now move on to the next thing that I'll read about and see if I can understand that, and then the next one. That's not the Dharma. That's not what you're used to doing, how you think things work. The Dharma doesn't work the way that you think that it works. We are conditioned beings, and that's our conditioning. That's something that we put in place that is not natural, that's not the way things are, that's how we have decided the way things are. So we go on and on like this. But with the Dharma, it's not like that. The Dharma is not of the world. It is not a subject that you learn about in that way. It really isn't. And you've somehow got to extract yourself from that. And see that it's about taking on a bundle which is small. The Dharma, as I often say, the Dharma is this, Buddhism is this big, but the Dharma is this big. The Dharma and Buddhism are not the same. Buddhism houses the Dharma, but Buddhism is not the Dharma. Buddhism is a dualistic creation, a skillful one. That's in no way criticizing it, but you've got to know it for what it is. It's the raft. It's the thing that helps you, but it's not the thing itself. And we get lost in that because it's just full of so much profusion and so much to learn and so much interest that we get lost in it. And what we forget about is the heart of it. And the heart of it is this big. And if you're Dharma practitioners, then that's what you focus on. You're not Buddhist practitioners, you're Dharma practitioners. And it's this big. So therefore, when you get a grasp of it, when you get a sense of what it, and you have to learn that because it's not a subject that you know, it's not in your history. Of course you've got to know, and you need your intellect and you need to link things together and get a sense of what it is, and then you get a sense of pretty good sense of what it is. You then don't move on. You stay with it and you come back, and it's like you come back to the beginning again, and you go around and around. You go around and around, and the nature of the Dharma is the more you go around, the more you see into it. You then transcend to it to a new level where you thought you understood it, and then you go, right. You see it that bit more clearer. You just go to a more subtle level. You've done the crude bit, which is obvious and in your face, but then you go to the next level. If you're willing to come back and go over it again, and that for a lot of us, we're not prepared to do that. Unless we get incredibly lost, and then we find we're sort of forced to do it. But even when things are going okay, are we prepared to come back? For most of us, I don't think it works that way. And I like to think that blue sky, white cloud contains. Well, I think it's all there. And you can read it. And if something isn't very clear for you, you can come back and read it again. And then when it is clear, come back and read it again. Because I'm telling you, that will help you to open yourself so that you've got ever more clarity about what the training is about and how you're constructed and what how you need to cultivate that clarity. To go to more, ever more subtle levels, and the whole thing exists in a little. And the white cloud, which is actually probably the most complicated component, because it houses all the features of insight and all of its levels and all of its perspectives and all the nuances of it. You can actually sort of unpack it and sort of make it into quite a big concept. And I know that's confused some of you. You're not clear about it. But I think if you come back to it and come back to it, it does get clearer. That's the nature. It's the spirit of this coming back. It's just like the time and space thing of this projecting, of going somewhere, of looking into the future, of what can I do, what's the next thing, what's the next thing. Thinking about the end of the retreat, how many days there are to go and how many periods there are to go, and reaching out and all of this is your samsara. This is the world of suffering that you will discover. If you look at it closely enough, you get intimate enough with it, you see how you are the creator, creating something that is not skillful, actually. It's not skillful and not conducive to your well-being. And the white cloud, again, is something to contemplate, is something not to move on, but to come back to and to see... what a bag of tricks there are there. Things that maybe you've not regarded as having the potential of insight. that you've not used skillfully. You've not used. You don't know really the value. Hopefully now you begin to see the value of reflection, reflecting, rather than think that it's all about getting into some deep samadhi and then some major breakthrough and that's insight. Well, it is, of course it is. But insight is more than that. And in order to take the 20th step, you've got to take 19 before you take the 20th. You don't talk about the 19, but without those, that last one is not possible. So this whole path begins on a very simple level, and it's not a black and white thing. It's a slow, subtle unfolding, a polishing, and you start right on the outside, and that image, that metaphor of a white cloud, I hope contains from the most subtle to the most sublime form of insight. It's all within the same. It's all within the one. And therefore, the insight path is for everybody, and I don't care if you can't put 2 seconds of meditation together, two seconds of stillness, and say what a hopeless case you are, and you can't do this, and why am I bothering to do this, because I'm no good. Well, okay, you haven't managed to pull that stillness together, but that's not stopping you from learning to reflect, to watch yourself, to get to know yourself. That's it. These are the first steps of insight. These are the first called, it's called self-awareness. And you use, all humans have got self-awareness, but you begin to use self-awareness in a skillful way, in a dharmic way, not use and not know its value. In fact, self-awareness can be incredibly destructive. I suspect we're probably the only animals that can actually take our own lives, because we don't like ourselves and our wretched circumstances, and you clearly don't like yourself. And that's only possible through self-awareness, through seeing it, and you don't like what you see, so you try to end it all because you don't know how to use that faculty, that jewel, that faculty that is the key to your liberation. You don't know how to use it skillfully. It's turned on you, and it's destroyed you, literally destroyed you. So self-awareness is the jewel, but it's also got the other side to it. It can be our destruction as well, and we have to learn to use it skillfully, obviously, and go and use it in the right way. And when we do, it takes us to our liberation. Complete opposite. So that even if you think you're a hopeless case in terms of meditation, that's not true. As long as you start to know the value of your self-awareness and begin to use it in a skillful way, then that's the path, that's the beginning, if you like. And from there, slowly your meditation will begin to change, and you get to know yourself, and the whole process of waking up to yourself takes off. And that's in the white cloud. And today I'd just like to touch upon the other half of the metaphor, the image. Rather lovely image, I think, of the blue sky. Blue skies evokes a lovely feeling, doesn't it? It is a lovely image of brightness, of warmth that we all like. If you live in this climate, if you can remember what a blue sky looks like and a little fluffy white cloud, I think we'd all be extremely happy to experience it, wouldn't we? We wouldn't, oh no, not another blue sky and a white cloud. Oh my, oh. I don't think too many of us react like that. I think actually, oh, fantastic, you know. We just want to get out and experience it and be at one with it and just feel that maybe life is really good, actually, after all. So it's a lovely, positive, evocative, emotional, poetic image, experience that helps to lift the spirit. And that white, that blue sky, again, is something we have to get to and get some sense of what it means by having this blue sky. We've done the white cloud. Let's see if we can look at the blue sky. The difficulty with the blue sky, the white cloud's easy, because it's full of concepts and full of a bag of many things, and if you're so inclined, you can be talking about the bag of tools forever. In fact, Buddhism is all about bags of tools. In fact, I suppose you could say Buddhism is a bag of tools, skillful tools that help to support and orientate you so that you get to know yourself. But when we come to reflect on the blue sky, what is it? Well, it's not really a thing at all. So then it becomes quite difficult to actually talk about something that isn't actually anything at all. How far can you go with this? How far can you drag it into the conceptual world and turn it into an object? Although, by the fact that you say blue sky, you have, by definition, made an object. But it's made an object so that you can awaken to it, that you can bring it into your vision, into your mandala. This notion of a blue sky, and at least awaken to it that actually it is a part of the whole picture. Even though when you evoke that, it's very difficult then to get involved with it as you can when you talk about, as I say, the white cloud, or if you want to talk about the five pillars and all these various things about taming restlessness. Blimey, that's one you could talk about forever. That's got many, many different perspectives and ways that you can articulate and wake up to see this thing called restlessness that is so crucial to awaken to wake up to and see it, because it is a big one. It is the big one that's keeping you trapped, and you cannot ignore it, however mundane it may seem on one level. From a dharmic level, it is so, so important. It is a major, major feature of our makeup. That's the thing, that part of us that's keeping us from experiencing who we really are. And all of those pillars are very, there's a lot of conceptual stuff, a lot of imagery that you can build. The fifth one is much more difficult, but even then, your true nature can evoke all sorts of possibilities. And when we come to the blue sky, it's a bit more difficult. Because a blue sky, you look up at a blue sky, well, what can you say? That it's blue, that it's big, and it's probably warm, because it's the sun will be somewhere. It's not night time, and the sun gives off some heat anyway. either a little heat or a lot of heat. So we associate warmth, a blue sky and warmth, we associate them together because invariably that's the experience most of the time. So it's warm and it's big and it's empty and there you go. That's it. It doesn't speak, does it? Doesn't walk. Doesn't dance. It's just there. And so it's very difficult to make it interesting beyond it being a lovely experience. It's very difficult to make it difficult to write books on it. But it's something for us that what that's pointing to, it's something for us for absolutely to wake up to, that it's not just this nothing thing that just sits there and you see it for what it is and there's nothing beyond it. But the blue sky used in this context is actually the very foundation of your training. And without it, there is no training, actually. And what that points to is stillness. Stillness and openness. And no thingness, no object, only this sense of stillness. Silence. When the mind goes quiet, when we're no longer running and chasing, we're in that place of stillness, that environment of stillness. And for us, okay, that actually can be quite boring, because, okay, oof, blimey, that's not very interesting, is it? Thank you for telling me that. And that's it, in itself, it's not a thing. It doesn't have sort of anything to offer, really, anything. But actually, that stillness is the most crucial feature of the spiritual path, whether it be Buddhist or any sort of spiritual path that people are on. It's very interesting. Just take passing interest in other people's spiritual journey, if you like, and just out of interest, where they're coming from, because this is not the only way. They'll never get that conceited to think that you've got to be a Buddhist in order to go beyond suffering. And thankfully not. And, well, actually, there's a program that's quite often on TV, so there's a website where the interviewer interviews people, all sorts of subjects, and most of them are of no interest, but often taking people who are on a spiritual path. And they usually, after introducing them and maybe putting a label around what they do and what they represent and stuff, and it's seldom Buddhism. I think I've only seen one, possibly two, that could fall into that category. And he asked the question, well, how do you begin? What's the starting point? And they all say stillness. All of them. You've got to get that stillness, that sense of silence. Silent. Silence. Stillness. Stillness. Silence is stillness. Stillness is silence. And that's the... As I call it, the environment. I call it the dharmic environment, because it's not only stillness, but dharmic means that there's truth there. There's a lot to discover within that stillness. There's a lot. The subtlety of the path of insight, of transformation, of waking up, whatever you want to call it, and a very, very subtle path, crude on one level, but more and more and more. So the subtlety, you cannot, it's a word but you cannot begin to imagine, you cannot know what that word, you cannot experience what that's pointing to. It is so refined that your mind is beyond your imagination to be able to, unless it's your conceit who likes, oh yes, I know what subtle means, but to experience it as an actual experience, it's quite astonishing. It is absolutely astonishing. And maybe a Buddha goes beyond that subtle awakening. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that, I don't know, I'll just leave that one. I don't have to go there, so it's not a problem for me. I'll just leave that one. But certainly until there's a lot of maturity, and that includes major insights and major transformations and major... that still, that subtlety is still at play. It never... I don't think it ever reaches the... I don't think there is an end game, actually, because that implies that reality is an object and you've arrived at the object. If reality is what reality really is, it isn't anything, so therefore you can never get to the end of it because it's not a thing. So that whole journey of subtlety just... It never ends, and it's always astonishing how you can so easily say, I've done it. Yes, I've done it. It's clear. Now I know. Yes. And then down me it goes, and then even more levels begin to open up. But none of that's possible without stillness. You can't crash through it. It's subtle. It is so delicate. It is so delicate that if you just almost blink, you don't see it. It's so delicate. And yet, paradoxically, when it does reveal and when it does settle and it opens up to what it is, nothing will ever shake it. It's permanent. And there you abide until it unfolds again. But that unfolding, unless you maintain that stillness, it won't happen, because it's so delicate. It's like you crush it. You can suppress it with the lightest touch. And the suppression is thoughts, is restlessness, is some agitation, some little, like looking at a pool of water and looking to the depths and seeing the bottom, the stones at the bottom, that you can see with clarity. And then a little, tiny little breeze comes, that you don't even feel it, it's so tiny. Just disturbs the surface, just that little bit, and you can't see. You can't see what you were once being able to see. It's gone. And then it's just a thought. It's just a memory. It's no longer a direct experience. Like that. That's all. That's the agitation that we have. Very coarse and very crude. This is the restlessness that we need to wake up to. And when we let go of the restlessness, and when that begins to settle, we begin to discover the blue sky. And I say discover, and that's a part of your understanding, is that you may think, I am making the blue sky. You're creating the blue sky. You're not. You're discovering it. You're discovering that. That stillness, that when you are still, it's not a thing, is it? Stillness is not a thing. This is what is so challenging for us, because actually stillness is incredibly boring. Like the blue sky is boring. I mean, okay, you know, it's a lovely, it's got its You know, it's got its impact when you first experience it, because you've not experienced it before. So it's got that, and then you sort of soak it all in, and then when the initial impact is gone. Well, come on then. Entertain me. And it doesn't entertain you, does it? And so you fall asleep. Or you start doing something because it's not entertaining you and it's not interesting anymore. It's not titillating you. And that's exactly the same with our own blue sky here. Is that we come to that, it's lovely. This is so peaceful and so open. It's just peace from this thing all the time. Now it's gone. Now then, it's all lovely and I feel so lovely and warm and so at peace with myself, so free and... Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Not complaining. How many have said to me, "Well, I can get to the peace," and then this little voice says, "What next?" There you are. This is the trap. This is the crossroads. This is where you come and you can find peace, isn't it? But do you know its value? Do you know the potential? Do you know the profundity of what you're experiencing? Or is it just something boring that you get fed up with and you want to be entertained, so you go back to your thoughts? And then you evoke sorts of images and all sorts, or you don't, or they come to you anyway, because you've found this still space, and you can't stay there, because you're not used to not doing something. You're not used to being a part of this endless flow that just captivates you. Takes hold of you and just doesn't let you go. So you spend your whole life in this chattering thing that goes on. Sometimes it's useful and interesting. Most of the time, it's not. And it's going and you chase it and you hold it and you in. And even if you don't like it, even if you're fed up with it and you're bored and you just would love it to go away, you've got so caught by it that you don't have the control to make it stop. It possesses you and it keeps chattering away to you and it keeps you occupied. All the time it's keeping you occupied. And yet if you want the fruit of a spiritual path, you've got to be still. You can't have the chattering and the awakening and all that's dear to all the things that you attach yourself to, all the things that define you of who you are, that give you that sense of security that I exist, I am this person because I think I have these thoughts and I have these opinions, I have these desires, I have these aversions, I have these fears. But never mind, when all these are at play, then this is defining me, this is who I am. And there you are. And when you let those go, there isn't anybody there, and it's you can't hack the stillness, you can't hack the no thingness. You've got to be busy, and of course that's not only just with thoughts, but then it spills over into activities, so that you're compounding the whole restless thing. It's not only your mind is gabbling away all the time, but you can't even be physically still. And your emotions are so caught up. You're being driven by your emotions, because emotions of desire and aversion, and emotions to keep... It's the motor. is the thing that's generating this, that's giving the energy, giving the power, so this thing is always on the move, is always agitated. And then when you want it to stop because it becomes so tiring and you can't let it go. It possesses you. You can't let it go. But if you don't let it go, then you will never know your blue sky. And if you don't know your blue sky, there will be no liberation. So there's a price to pay. We all want to be free, whatever you want to call it, just free of some of your suffering, free of bits and pieces you don't like, or whether you want to go the whole hog, whatever. You won't get any of that, because the most essential feature of the change, whether you want to call it transformation, whether you want to call it just awakening, and I know there's all sorts of perspectives that you can bring, different traditions have different ways of expressing and dealing with these things. But whatever you want to call it, however you want to perceive it, that none of it's going to happen unless you have that stillness. Because that's where it actions from. That's where things can change from that place, from that still open experience. From there, the whole world that you've created and got yourself completely caught by can be very, very seriously undermined. Challenged, undermined to the extent where its whole foundation begins to rock and crack and break, and the bits within it begin to crumble, begin to fall away, all coming from that stillness. That stillness alone will have a major effect. But we can also, trying to avoid that today, we can bring the bag of tools into that environment and just seriously help the whole process on. But I want to focus on the blue sky, which is very boring on its own. If you don't know what it is, if you don't know why its potential, what its real nature is, and why we do it, and then it all gets a bit meaningless after a while. It's boring. Oh, I'm really finding this practice boring. I can be still, so what? It's okay, but it's boring. Because you don't know what to do with it. You don't know what it means to be still. You don't know where you are. You don't know what that. You put a word on it. I'm still. I'm peaceful. I'm silent. These are words, and you get trapped by the concept, and that's all. Oh, so what? These are pretty mundane words. That's it. But you don't realise the threshold that you're on, and this is about using self-awareness in a positive way, so that you can begin to use that environment for dharmic purposes, not for worldly purposes that will take you. Can take you into very, very negative places, i.e. you don't like yourself, you don't like the world, you don't like living. And then the ultimate act of the ego, because it's got you so much, in its grip, that you chuck yourself out of a window. That's the ultimate ego trip. The ego doesn't care whether it's like and dislike, whether it's alive or even dead. At that moment, it's at its zenith, and you've fallen for it. You've not been able to use the faculties that you've got that will take you to the divine, that will take you the complete other way, so that you discover your true nature, so that you discover who you really are, and taste and experience the freedom that those faculties will take you to, if you know how to use them skillfully and put them in place and use them. And in order to put them in and to get the maximum benefit, the maximum use of that faculty, that jewel called self-awareness, you need the blue sky. And the more the blue sky is there, the more the potential the potential of that, what we call self-awareness, begins to clarify more and more, and you begin to see the truth of your self-awareness, what it really is, not what you think it, not what you start off with, what you think that it is. You start off with the fact that you think it's a part of me. It's a part of your mental and physical makeup. It's one of the skandhas. Somehow it's a part of the package. That's your starting point. That's how it's perceived. But slowly you begin to extract yourself from that. That you begin to extract that experience of awareness and begin to see that maybe it doesn't quite fit into the same box as everything else does, and begin to see that it's got different qualities, so that you begin to wake up to what this thing called self-awareness really is. And that waking up can only take place in stillness. And of course the paradox of it is, and this is what makes it so difficult, is that stillness is your awareness. It is not awareness coming to a place called stillness, one thing going to another thing. It is awareness itself that's discovering its own innate nature, which is awareness, which is stillness. But what happens, because of your habits and what you put in place, it keeps thinking it's a part of your world, part of your duality, and gets lost and diminished, so that it's not realizing what it really is. So that blue sky is not just some empty, boring thing. It is, it will be that if you don't know how to use it, if you don't know how to move on from that place of stillness to realize the full potential of this thing that's very boring, that isn't a thing at all actually. So how, it's got to be boring if it's not a thing. But this is the Dharma. This is where you begin to transcend your dualistic conditioning, where everything exists in this world, everything is dualistic, everything has got to fit into this experience of duality. And there is nothing other than this, and you are totally and completely convinced that there is nothing other than what you see and what you experience in duality. And you can see this so vividly displayed, like the scientists now looking for the nature of the universe. Now they find the God particle now, and they say, yes! But as somebody has already said, yes, we found the God particle, but blimey, that's just opening up even more things. They think they get to the end of the road, and damn me, they find that, and of course, it's duality. They'll go on and on and on forever. These wonderfully brilliant people who are so admired and respected and get fabulous salaries and live in wonderful and have a wonderful existence, just going on and on and on with this, from one step to another, totally convinced that the beginning and the end of this is in this world of objects, is in this world of duality. We are so trapped, even these wonderfully intelligent people with the best intentions are just so utterly and completely deceived and cannot see other than that. And any suggestion other than that is laughable. Any suggestion other than the dualistic world of objects, of space and time, and that's where the answer is there. But when you come to your place of stillness and you really begin to slowly wake up to what that blue sky actually is introducing you to, or it's introducing it itself, beginning to awaken to it, so thinking that it's thinking that it's this part of this dualistic world and the universe, thinking that somehow it's all part of form, now beginning to just amazingly, just learning to be still, just learning to let it all go. Train yourself to let it go, because you don't let it go by an act of will. You train yourself like a meditation cushion. You learn some skills how you learn to let this dualistic experience go. You learn not to buy into it. You learn to wake up to it and see it, and you learn to let it go. And slowly, 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 the thing fades. It loses its power. It loses its grip, hold on you, until you can come and begin to experience that still place. And yet, lo and behold, you're not dead. You're not asleep. You're not. In fact, quite the opposite. Invariably, you're a lot more alive and a lot more bright. And yet, you're not involved with this thing that you're trapped by, and you think there's nothing beyond that. This is it. This is reality. And now you begin to find a part of you that somehow it's almost like it's extracting itself from that. And that the essential nature of that is one of, it's not a part of it. It's not a part of all of that confusion, that proliferation, is quite the opposite of that. It's not busy, it's actually still. It's the complete opposite. It's still. Its nature is one of stillness. That is what it is in itself. And that to us and our conditioning and the way that we've been brought up, it's fascinating, but soon becomes very boring as a direct experience. And so we don't realize actually the threshold that we're on. We don't fully, but we like it, but we don't sort of go past the pleasant experience that it gives us. We don't then open up to that more. Instead, we sort of turn away from it because, okay, well, that's very nice, thank you. Now I go back to something more interesting. That's nice, I've come back again, I like that. But you don't clock it. It's just nice and another thing, another experience. And so and even in Buddhism, this is done. This is not for everybody else. Buddhists are well, I'm going to say as guilty as most, that it's lovely, but it's something. It's just a thing, and it's like that, and we don't need to know any more about it. They don't know that actually, to rest and to open, and to stay with that blue sky, opens up, and takes you beyond the dualistic world. And takes you to the source of creation. No, and here it is. It's under your nose, and you want to know. You want to know the source of creation. You want to know the God particle, in inverted commas. Be still, and open, and you will discover it. The problem is, you'll never be able to give it to anybody. You won't be able to put it under a microscope. You want me to take a photograph of it and show somebody. So therefore, but that quest to know, the question can be answered, and you can answer it within yourself, but you can never give it. And so we will go on forever, always going out there looking for this, where it all began. All this Big Bang stuff. Have you ever heard anything so childish in your life? Bang! Ooh! And then all these little people start running around, all because of something exploded. Fantastic, isn't it? That's the state that you get in when you go down the wrong road. You end up being completely ridiculous. because you've got to justify what you're doing and find an answer. And the more you look, the more ridiculous you make yourself look. Because you're never going to find the answer, that's why. You will never find it. For the God particle, there'll be another thing that opens out, and then there'll be another one, because it's not the truth. When we can start to link consciousness with the exterior, with that science, when we can link our own consciousness with that, boy, will that change big time. That will change. But we haven't got that far yet. Not in the conventional way. So for us to... The blue sky... The tools of insight are very interesting. It's wonderful fascination, all these. But the sky is something that can pass you by, because it's not anything to understand. You can suss it, as it were, in a few moments, and that's like the end of the subject, the end of the story. Therefore, you can go back to things that are more challenging. A huge mistake. You're on the spiritual path. That is the most fundamental place to be, because there's the doorway, there's the gateway to your true liberation, to discover the creation of the universe, if you like, the your divine nature that we live out of, that we are a part of. There, through learning to be still, that blue sky for us is something that we need to nurture, bring to our cushion, but also bring as much as we possibly can bring to our daily life. And that the nature of that sky-like nature, the sky-like mind, the open sky-like mind, is that it's open, it is not a thing, it is open and embraces all of life. But it's like a mirror that never gets caught, never gets lost in the world, but sees it and knows it, but is never a part of it. And from that experience, from where that is, there you can begin to unravel the mysteries of yourself. And unraveling the mystery of yourself and who you really are, not who you think you are, unraveling the mystery of who you are, you will also unravel the mystery of the universe in exactly the same place. Stillness, blue sky. Don't underestimate it.